Hi, everyone. I am Dr. Ikenna Wamba, a physician executive at Gentem Health, and we're joined by Dr. James Carson today. Hey, James, thanks for spending some time with us. I'm glad we were able to get you for a little bit. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we jump into things, tell us a little bit about yourself. What motivated you to become a doctor, and how did you go from James Carson to Dr. James Carson?
To be honest, I decided when I was a kid, like maybe 2 years old, that I wanted to be a doctor. Nobody was a doctor in my family, but I always respected the profession and I really loved my pediatrician. So basically, as time went on within school, whenever we would have to do research about careers or anything like that, I would always do research about being a doctor. In high school, I decided I wanted to work with athletes, so I decided on orthopedic surgery and luckily had the opportunity to shadow an orthopedic surgeon, the one who had operated on my knuckle maybe 6 months before, and really loved it. So I just continued to pursue it the whole way.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that journey through undergrad, medical school, and residency?
Most definitely. I had the excellent opportunity actually in high school to do a summer program called Summer Science Academy. So I spent 2 weeks at University of Michigan at the medical school, taking some short classes, doing dissections and anatomy and stuff like that. So I got it started in that pipeline program because of a counselor of mine told me about it and made me apply. So then when I got into college, I originally planned on majoring in chemistry, but because I loved chemistry. But then as I looked what was required for the MCAT, I felt like biochemistry would better prepare me. So I ended up majoring in biochemistry. And also every summer, as part of that same pipeline program I had done in high school, I had like internships. So the first 2 summers after college, I did research internships through the medical school. Then the third and fourth summers, I actually worked as a camp counselor for that summer camp that I participated in. And I also had a job in the medical school in the diversity office. So like I had the rare opportunity to be around, you know, people who were working on the diversity initiatives for University of Michigan Med School. And they were also just a resource for the minority students, so I got to know a lot of the students also through working at the medical school, and got some good hands-on mentorship from some of the deans in the office and stuff like that. So, you know, I was very fortunate in my journey. Just, you know, kept falling into good situations. So with all that said and done, after University of Michigan, I went to Johns Hopkins University for medical school. From the beginning, I knew I wanted to pursue orthopedics, so I got paired up with a preceptor who was an orthopedic surgeon, spent time with her throughout my first year of school. The summer after my first year, I met an orthopedic surgeon who took on 2 research assistants, medical students who wanted to do research, so I got the opportunity to work with him for that summer. So I published an article, got to present it at a sports medicine conference, and also got to scrub in with him in surgery and see patients in the office. So just those experiences confirmed what I already thought, that I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. So I continued to pursue it throughout. Between my third and fourth year of medical school, I took a 1 year leave of absence and pursued a master's in public health at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. While doing that, I got certificates in health disparities and also health finance and management. Then went along, finished my last year of medical school, and I matched at Howard University for residency in orthopedic surgery. So I spent 5 years there doing my residency, had great experiences, learned from some great surgeons, and then did a one-year fellowship at University of Chicago in adult reconstruction, which is essentially joint replacement and learning how to do advanced joint replacement like revisions and complicated stuff like that.
That sounds like a pretty exciting and winding journey.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, what prompted you to pursue private practice?
So I'm in kind of a hybrid practice now. It's a sort of private practice model, but I'm actually employed. But I mean, that's sort of been the goal from the beginning, to set my own standard, to run an office the way I see fit. And, you know, to be completely honest, it's a conversation that's never had almost in your training, is that to hospitals, you know, they'll never pay you what you're worth, essentially. The only way to get what you're worth is if you work for yourself. Otherwise, you are, I mean, you can negotiate a contract, but essentially you allow your employer to tell you, you know, what your time or what your effort is worth. Beyond that, a lot of employers have certain rules such that any outside activity, outside of your work, if it's dealing with medicine, that they can actually claim a portion of that income that you generate, even if it has nothing to do with them. And also a lot of employers have clauses such that any intellectual property you create, they can claim ownership of. So, you know, those are some things that have helped fuel my desire to be within a private practice model. And additionally, just, you know, right now for surgeons, surgical centers are great investments. However, being employed, they can sort of limit what outside investments you can make when it comes to where you take your patients to operate.
I've never quite heard the benefits articulated as you have just now. I'm glad that we had this opportunity to discuss. Ultimately, private practice is a great path for folks who are seeking a little bit more autonomy and freedom. What advice would you give physicians interested in that path?
One thing is to sort of know the layout, know the medical layout of the area that you want to work in now. And being private practice can come in many different forms, meaning like just within Houston, I have a buddy who's a solo private practitioner who's I'm just talking orthopedic surgery right now. He's a solo practitioner, meaning it's just him. He runs his practice. Everything coming in, everything going out goes through him. Another model is one in which you join, say, a small practice that has 3 to 5 surgeons or how many ever. And then there's another model in which, you know, which there are a couple of them here, which are private practice. However, they're huge practices that employ over 100 surgeons within the practice. So just knowing, one, what you are interested in doing, two, you know, what your future goals are. Joining a practice that has more members, you know, obviously creates more capital within the practice, to maybe be involved in construction projects, building your own surgical center, building your own medical office building, because real estate is also really big within medicine. However, that also comes with more real estate, with more employees, comes more overhead. So, you know, you have to be careful with that, because if you grow too big, too fast, you got a lot of overhead without increased income. So just knowing what you want to do and knowing the layout of the city, like, say, the areas that are underserved, maybe with your specialty, areas that are underserved in general. You know, we didn't get into this just for the money. However, if you're in private practice, payer mix is very important. So certain parts of the city could have a very different payer mix than another part of the city. Just an example, two of the different hospitals I cover, one in which I'll say 95% of the people, this is just like on-call coverage, I'll say 95% of the people, maybe 90% of the people have insurance, while another hospital that I cover, I'd say maybe 30% of the people who come in for trauma have insurance. But, you know, when it comes to getting paid for your work, the assumption is if there's no insurance, you probably won't get paid. So, you know, medicine is not all about that. But if you're in private practice, you gotta, I mean, the bottom line is important. And in order to do more charity work, you also need plenty of paying customers. So just understanding the geography of a city, understanding the needs of different areas and opportunities, I should say, are very important considerations when thinking about going into private practice. And then, you know, another important thing is money. I mean, have you stacked enough chips to go off on your own? Are you prepared to take out business loans? You know, one of the things I noticed is that sometimes joining a private practice, you can get a 1 to 2 year guaranteed income, but that guarantee might be lower than, say, an employed practice. So you might start, at a lower amount. However, in private practice, the ceiling is much higher too. So lower ground floor, but higher ceilings.
Okay. It sounds like there is an added layer of education necessary to be successful in private practice. However, we both know that our training does not necessarily provide us with that education. How would you advise physicians to develop that awareness?
So one way, listening to podcasts like your own. Basically, not even when it comes to private practice, but finance in general, we are woefully undertrained on. So I have a collection of podcasts that I try to listen to essentially learn, because that's the only way to do it. You have to seek it out on your own. Luckily, I had a particular attending who was very business savvy. So I used to just sit down and chop it up with him, and he would, like, you know, give advice about being private practice. So it's all about resources, podcasts, books, talking to people, talk to as many people as you can. And just, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you end up learning through bad experiences. You know, the education comes in a variety of ways, but you have to seek it out.
Definitely agree with you on that. You know, most of our training is geared toward the clinical aspect of medicine. So just kind of understanding the basics. I know there's some resources out there that are available, but understanding the basics and going beyond that requires a level of initiative. You mentioned how sort of learning on your own and sometimes learning through experiences that aren't the best can be meaningful. You know, the timing is perfect with respect to this, but in terms of COVID-19, how do you believe this might impact private practice for physicians moving forward?
You know, this definitely negatively affected a lot of physicians, hospitals, etc. I have very many people who are pure private practice, and you know, they basically all had to take pay cuts. One of my partners from my group, you know, left to join this private practice. But the timing could not have been worse. Of course, you know, it was planned from the end of last year, so we had no idea that COVID would hit like this. So his final day with our practice was March 31st until he started to join his new practice. And even at the practice, he had the opportunity to join as an employee initially and become a partner, or just join as a partner. So he chose to join as a partner. But when you join as a partner, it's strictly eat what you kill. And so when he joined, essentially, he could not do surgeries. Yeah. He could not even see patients in the office. So he had to take out loans to cover himself for a couple of months until things got back up and running here. So you know, it can be a serious, you know, thing. It slowed down income. Even myself, being employed, you know, I was on track to make a large bonus by the end of the year, but that was all derailed by COVID and not doing any elective cases for 2 months. So, you know, I get the thing is that the idea is that medicine is a recession-proof field. However, we found that although we're still needed, the recession hits medicine too.
Based on what you've seen here with COVID-19, you alluded to that reduction in patient volumes in terms of cases, and really the cash flow crunch that hit a lot of practices. How do you think we can change and improve private practice to be more supportive to physicians interested in that
so,
model?
So, you know, one of the things that did change, and we don't know how long it's going to be around, is the whole telemedicine thing. Before, telemedicine would only be reimbursed under certain very restrictive conditions. So essentially, if you do telemedicine, you might as well just be working for free because that you wouldn't get reimbursed for it. However, given COVID and social distancing, like Medicare and Medicaid and other large private insurers started allowing doctors, like within orthopedics, to do telemedicine and still be reimbursed for it. So, I mean, that's a big thing, you know, given that COVID might be around for a while and we might get spikes of it at times, it's important to be able to pivot to something like telemedicine to at least keep outpatient volumes up and even allow to, say, prep for surgeries when they're allowed to resume. Like the infrastructure within my office was lagging, we found out, because we weren't prepared for telemedicine until like maybe the last 2 to 3 weeks. However, a whole month and a half passed where we had significantly reduced volumes and no way to make up for it. So, you know, with telemedicine, it allows you to see pre-ops. It allows you to, you know, prepare for surgeries. We couldn't even, say, be seeing patients in the office and say, okay, you'll get your surgery when we open back up, just because we couldn't see people. When telemedicine came, you know, when we were able to, utilize it, we were able to, you know, do, say, mobile x-rays. So we even have x-rays taken while we're talking to our patients. You know, the physical exam is a bit limited, but depending on the problem, you know, the exam that you can assist the patient in doing on themselves is adequate to be able to prepare for surgery or, you know, book new surgeries. Especially for me, I'm doing joint replacement. Arthritis is arthritis. So if you have bad arthritis, you've tried conservative treatment. Whether or not I'm putting my hands on your knee as you bend it and straighten it, that's not going to change the fact that you got bad arthritis. So
that's true. Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, that's one of the things, I guess, how else could COVID-19 or how else could we better prepare given what's happened? You know, I guess just finding ways maybe to have like 4 people within private practice side hustles initially. The one thing I've learned in medicine, period, is that just practicing medicine and delivering healthcare cannot be your only hustle, because if there's ever anything that prevents you from directly delivering healthcare, you know, you can't make money. Yeah. So you can do plenty of healthcare related things, you know, without actually physically delivering healthcare and still get paid if you have side hustles.
Certainly. Well, you know, I completely agree with you. I think we've seen physicians take on a bigger role in the awareness campaigns through social media, setting up of webinars, patient education as well. And we're seeing the role of a physician evolve to meet the challenges head on. I think that's pretty cool.
Yes, most definitely.
So with that being said, you know, I just want to give you an opportunity to share anything that you might want to share that you have on your mind before we wrap up the podcast.
I mean, basically, just with this podcast discussing, say, private practice and venturing into private practice, I think, ultimately, I mean, you know, there are pros and cons of both, but ultimately wanting to have control and have a bigger say in what you do, how you work, how much you work, you know, I think private practice is the way to go for that type of thing. And also even the ability to have side hustles. Because, like I said, some of my friends, we just openly discuss our contract things, you know, clauses in our contract, and they have contracts that say that their outside activities, you know, whatever money they make belongs, either all of it or a portion of it belongs to their employer. And if they invent anything, their intellectual property belongs to their employer. So, you know, things like that alone are enough to make you, you know, make you say,
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your message. It's really going to be important for physicians moving forward to stay in touch with, like you said, some of the more business related aspects of medicine, because obviously they're relevant. And obviously they're important for the preservation of healthcare's sustainability of private practice.
Yes, sir.
So thank you. All right. Well, this concludes our podcast. Signing off. All right.